Again, this is another edition of Conversations with Dr. Cowan and Friends. Today's friend is Gary Lineham from Human Garage Foundation or organization. And we did it. I met Gary when they did an interview with me on his live stream Instagram. There was like 970,000 people watched it, which definitely caught my attention. And that led me to think maybe this guy is doing something which we should know about. So I think without further ado, then I'm going to get Gary to explain a little bit who he is, how he got into this. And Gary, the same question I ask everybody, why would anybody want to know about what you're doing? So thanks for joining me and take it away.
Well, I'm not a doctor, first of all, but I have studied health my whole life. I was a tech entrepreneur, and through the 80s and 90s, and through that period of time, I was also a bodybuilder when I was younger, and I fell under a 600-pound squat when I was in the early part, just before I went to the nationals, and it put me on this journey of seeking to solve a pain issue in my body. And a lot of people have this story, injured in school or in sports somewhere, and trying to resolve the issue. Well, you know, combined with a number of car accidents and concussions and stuff like that, it had progressively gotten worse and worse. And for about 10 years, I was in about a 4 to 6 pain. And then for 10 years after that, about a 6 to a 9 pain. And that was constant. It was my baseline every day. And I had spent at that time $2.5 million with hundreds of practitioners all over the world trying to solve this pain issue, which seemed to occur like a back pain, a neck pain, a shoulder pain, a lot of mental disruption, a lot of concussion syndromes like PTSD. And
you were like in your 30s and 40s at the time.
Correct. Yeah. 20s, 30s, and 40s.
Yeah.
And it peaked at 40. Where I came to a point where I'd been pushed over the edge, and because of the stressors from the injuries and the concussions, I lost the ability to use even a computer for a period of time. I just couldn't connect my mind with how a keyboard would make a screen work, and I know you've seen that in your profession.
Still don't know how a keyboard makes a screen work. In fact, I have no idea, but I don't really care. So. That's the difference is I don't care and you cared probably.
Well, for me, I knew enough about health. I'd spent about $2.5 million trying to resolve this. And I started hiring physicians and doctors and practitioners of all sort to educate me, because I figured out if they couldn't help me, that they could maybe lead me to something that would help me. And if I could know what they knew, I could figure out why they weren't able to help me. That was my root logic.
Yeah.
And so in 2010, it peaked and I had lost my ability to function properly. So I took some money and took my business expertise and went into one person, Dr. David Rubenstein. He was a PhD. He had developed this neuromuscular calibration. He's considered the grandfather of it. He developed this way of moving the body that would repair motion patterns. It was for like Olympic level athletes, but it seemed to get rid of my pain. And so we opened up a clinic based around that. And I just started sitting in and learning. And I'm autodidactic, so I learn very fast through examples. I can solve puzzles very easily. And I just saw this as a big puzzle that I was trying to solve. And, you know, fast forward a couple of years later, his therapy stopped working for me and I wanted to bring in a bunch of other modalities. And that wasn't really what he wanted to do. So we split our ways and the Human Garage itself formed. And I started collecting practitioners from every discipline and learning what I could. So fast
forward.
You
want to say one word on why you called it Human Garage?
Sure. I mean,
it certainly stands out as a innovative or unusual moniker, I guess you'd call it.
Well, to be honest with you, we started in the garage.
There you go.
And what it looked like when our marketing people looked at it, it looked like we were a mechanic. We would touch people, get them up to walk, touch them again. It was like tuning a car. And so they said, well, you're tuning the human vehicle. So that's a so you, it's like a body garage. And then that didn't work. We had to put human body garage, and that was too long, so we shortened it down. But we're in Venice, California, and we developed this way of working with the body and releasing, instead of increasing muscle function, releasing tension that what the muscles were working against. And it just seemed to go off. And this is the, you can only do this in Venice, California. We had mainstream celebrities like DC comic heroes like Superman and White Willow and coming to this garage in Venice, and then an apartment as it got too hot to get this release process that we had developed. And
So the
through
basic
that,
idea at that point was muscle dysfunction is related to tension.
yeah, exactly. It was like the current philosophy is if you have something in your back that's not working, strengthen your back. And our belief was, why don't we release what is causing the restriction for the muscles to function?
Got it.
And this bloomed after we moved into a clinic, and it bloomed into 52 practitioners from every discipline, everything from neurologists to cardiologists to functional medicine doctors, Chinese medicine, to all based around this theory that we were working on with fascia. And the world didn't know a lot about fascia at that time.
And now
And
we're talking about what year?
this would be 2012. And at that time, surgeons were still cutting into fascia indiscriminately. So we
But just
developed.
to be clear, then the first step is there's tension that's the reason the muscles are dysfunctioning and therefore pain and disability. And the second insight was the vehicle or the location, that's better. The location of the tension is the fascia.
And then taking on Terrell and Simmons' work, he was JFK's doctor where pain was referred. We started to notice that all pain was referred. Like we could find, if you had a pain in a shoulder, we could find it in a hip. If you had a pain in your jaw, we could find it in your foot. And this was just anecdotal science looking at things and saying, observing this happens over here. Did it happen with another practitioner, another patient? And did it happen over time? And through literally tens of thousands of treatments with 10,000 patients who were like Olympic athletes, celebrities, cases that no one else in the world could fix. Because if you're coming to us, likely you'd been everywhere else and nothing else worked. And we just were willing to try stuff. And we had patients or clients that were willing to let us try. So it was a grand experiment, and we had 10,000 active patients at a time through a 10-year period. And we did about 5,000 treatments a month between 1.5 and 2 hours. So it was a fairly scaled operation. And what my background is
You mean
systems
each
programming.
treatment was 1.5 to 2 hours?
Yes. And sometimes we would have 3 to 4 disciplines working at the exact same time on every patient. So you'd have acupuncture, chiropractic, you'd have somebody from internal medicine or functional medicine coming in, consulting, helping along the line. You may have a reflexologist and one of our body workers called motion mechanics, all at the same time. And it was more like a conducting of a symphony, like each practitioner was an instrument. And the fascial motion mechanic, we called ourselves, would direct the work and say, okay, I need more tension here. I need to relieve it here. Like go into the gallbladder meridian here. And there was a few of us that just learned how to conduct this. And what it was a symphony of practices working together. And through doing that, I noticed a lot of times that the practices were talking about the same body, but they were using different languages. And so this is why their communication when they weren't together wasn't working. Like you go from one practitioner to another, to another, to another. And it never seems to work because they're using quite often similar, different language about the same topic. And they didn't understand, and the patient wasn't able to bridge that gap.
Can you
So,
Give us an example of that. I think I can imagine, but.
Yeah, I mean, a reflexologist working on kidney, an acupuncturist working on kidney, and a body worker working on kidney, all working on three different spots, none of them actually understanding what the other one was technically doing. But they're all working on the same issue, which is kidney.
Yeah. So they all think they're dealing with the energy flow or something to do with the dysfunction of the kidney, but they don't know, they're doing different things and therefore not necessarily working together to solve the problem.
Right. And if they weren't working together in the same space, they certainly weren't working together when they're in different offices, not talking to each other.
Right. Got
So
it.
we took down, we believe that also privacy was one of the benchmarks of disease because of the shame and guilt and fear that goes along with a disease or a diagnosis. So we took down all of the offices, all the walls, and had an open floor. And if you didn't want to talk about your cancer, your herpes, or whatever your dysfunction was, then and you weren't comfortable doing that in that environment, then you weren't our patient. And people just became accustomed to that's the way it was. And what we found is that when we took the shame out of the diagnosis or took the diagnosis out, we found that people responded better. That was one of the first things.
So in other words, let me see. So there was just somehow a big room and a person who has, like genital lesions would just come in and describe in with a whole lot of people there, just essentially just describing what they had. Like, here's what the story is. And then people would start sort of dealing with them. Is that?
Yeah, we wouldn't be examining somebody if that was the issue. We wouldn't examine them in front of everybody else, but the conversations would happen. So it was like a soft, and there was lots of people. This was in a very big house in Venice, California. It was a $10 million home with multiple levels in different areas. So one of the things that came out of it was each and every one of the disciplines was able to hear what everybody else was saying or believing about the issue. So
Yeah.
collectively, every single person that was working there in this experiment developed a new understanding of the body based on the collaboration. And it produced some interesting observations, which then again later on became results.
Yeah.
And we had, and what functioned well is that we had results. And people always ask me, how did I practice without a license? And I have a background in legal. I have a background in business and operations. I just did what pharmaceutical companies do. I used informed consent. Said, I'm not a doctor. This is what I'm going to do to you. You accept this as risks and let's move forward. And so it gave me the ability to practice. We didn't bill insurance, so it was all cash. And it was quite expensive because of the outlay of how many people, like 4 to 5 people on a patient at one time.
Yeah.
So it was not an exercise in cost effectiveness. It was an exercise in getting results.
Got it. And so these are people who come with all sorts of so-called medical diagnosis. They've been told they have rheumatoid arthritis, or they've been told they have fibromyalgia or Lyme disease, or cancer or high blood pressure. They come to you, and this group of people, all together in an open space, starts talking to them and doing things to with them, not to them, but.
And we ran a lot of clinical and subclinical testing as well. So we were using everything from subclinical testing of impedance of the organs all the way to
Yeah.
biological blood to hormone testing. And as we got more sophisticated, things like hair follicle testing, because we couldn't figure out why people weren't responding. So we had all these big questions that were coming up. And the long story of it was during that period of time, I was able to get my body out of pain, but I was also reliant upon the constant care of my practitioners. So 3 to 5 times a week, I'm getting some sort of treatment or even more sometimes. And I'm working 12, 14-hour days, but I'm out of pain. I'm feeling like I'm functioning for the first time in 30 years. But what happened was, is I went on a vacation. And I started to unravel in that vacation and I started going back into pain patterns. And I came to the realization that all of this work, at that time, $17 million worth of work and care and education hadn't gotten me anywhere because I couldn't leave my own care, and my care had become so specialized that I couldn't go to a normal, let's say, chiropractor because we'd already perfected past the normal techniques and my body was dependent upon this specialized care. At that point, I realized that if it wasn't working for me, it's not really working for others. It's a big band-aid. So in other words, we're taking away an issue or a problem, but we're not making people independent, which I wanted to be independent. And I'd go home sometimes and I'd be in pain and I would feel helpless
Yeah.
because, I'd feel angry because I could fix everybody's pain. And then here at night, when, because I had been working all day, my rib is out, my neck is out, I'm having a panic attack in my head. And I felt legitimately helpless and I didn't want to feel helpless anymore. So I had made a decision in 2018, I'm going to close the practice. I tried several ways to do it. Didn't function exactly the way I wanted to, but nevertheless, I was finally done December 2019. And I also had a premonition that something was coming in the world. I use astrology. That's my way of viewing the world. And it said that January 15th, 2020, I just needed to be out of the United States. That was my interpretation. So I went to Canada, where I'm from, and then January 15th was the
It's so
first.
weird. It may have been a bad choice.
Well, where I was, it was pretty good.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah, it was bad for certain areas, but I was up in British Columbia, up in the mountains, and I
Yeah.
had complete free rein, no restrictions anywhere.
Yeah.
What happened was that January 15th, 2020 was the first day of the first COVID case. And I didn't know that until February. But it made sense that I had done that. And during that period of time, I was back in pain. So what happened for myself is I was saying, okay, I've been working with all these pro athletes and Olympic athletes, giving them these treatments that they would do with themselves in between their treatments with their practitioners or their teams. And I said, well, how would I apply that to myself? Like I did that on the table to you, Tom. How do I do that for myself? And I just started jerry-rigging my own therapies, my own fascial therapies that I had developed that had worked and become successful, and figured out how to do them myself. And when I had two partners at the time, Cynthia and Jason. Cynthia was a metaphysical practitioner. Jason was a professional athlete that was going to go to medical school, and he had come and work with me to learn, and he had just picked it up faster than anybody had ever picked it up. And we decided to just go off in the mountains and start training practitioners or therapists with this new way of working on ourselves and then working on people.
And still at this point, the philosophy is still illness or disease is caused by abnormal tension, which is related to some dysfunction of the fascia around the tissues and organs and muscles of the body. Is that?
Yeah, I mean that's the short answer that is, but the longer answer is stress is the dysregulator of all disease. And number one stressor in the body is movement tension. If you have movement tension, your body is in pain and discomfort. Your body's firing adrenaline, norepinephrine, and cortisol, and then when you're eating, you're not really absorbing anymore. You're not able to produce serotonin, oxytocin, melatonin, dopamine. All of the estrogen, estradiol, testosterone aren't produced properly in those environments. So what we would do is take people out of mechanical stress so that their body could function properly again. And that was just the observation that if we did this, people's other disease issues started to get better. So take the body out of stress, do that a couple times a day,
Yeah.
then the body would start to find its own healing mechanisms. That was our
Got it.
belief.
Yeah. Personally, I would have probably left out the hormone chemical stuff and just say that if you relieve the stress of the body, as evidenced by the reduction or absence of this pain, you can move freely and that everything will start to work better, and that's a good thing.
Yeah, I mean, I'm coming from not being a scientist or a doctor, getting into the world, learning the language, learning to communicate so I could communicate, to disintermediating that communication so that this belief system where I'm still talking to people in two worlds. Because I definitely have a belief in one world and I'm still communicating to people so that their level of comfort would allow us to do the work.
Got it. Okay.
But basically, I was starting to lean towards a lot of what your beliefs are, which is, like there is no immune system, there are no viruses. Everything that we know about the human body. I mean, I took this one measurement. We were looking at nerve conduction testing, and I was talking to the scientist that was doing it with me. It was for an Olympic athlete. And he was telling me, he was going on about proteins and how everything in the body works through proteins in the cells. And he said, basically in round numbers, he said there's between 5 and 20,000 proteins per cell. And I said, well, we got 50 trillion cells. That's 5 quintillion proteins. And I said, so scientifically, what do we know? Do we know like about 2/3 or 80% of the number of proteins? And he says, no. He says, we only know what 100,000 are, and we really only work with about 5,000. And I said, we work with 5,000 out of 5 quintillion. How could we reasonably scientifically say that we know anything about the human body when everything from thinking to blinking is done through the action of a protein? And that was, it was for me, I was just looking at it again from systems management and computer logic. I say, we don't know anything. And I say this to practitioners all over the world today. It's time for us to pr stop pretending we know and start observing again. And it's also time for us to observe the science of results. And because so many people would come in and say, I've done all these things that I'm supposed to do, but I don't feel good. And if you've done all those things and you don't feel good, then there's something wrong with something here. And it's probably those things that you're doing.
It didn't work.
Yeah. And I see your logic around that, and that's what I love about what you do. And again, I'm coming to this realization my own way because I build systems, computers, programs, cryptology, and I see the body as a fluid adaptive biological computing system, which means that it has language, it has storage, it has processing power, it has all of the components of a computer are in us. As a matter of fact, computers are designed after us. So I just started saying, well, the brain itself, if you look at it, we did this one nerve conducting test, Tom. It was interesting. We put a stimulation on the foot and we watched with the EEG the signal come through the nervous system up through the homunculus and cerebellum back down for motor control. And that whole route path took 1.5 seconds. So I asked the seemingly innocent but stupid question, apparently. Well, how do we move when we step on glass? And they said, oh, silly. You just don't understand the body. You're not a scientist. It's a ganglion reflex. And I'm like, wait a second here. If I step on glass, I don't go boing. I move intelligently to safety. So that's not a reaction. It's an intelligent movement. And that happens immediately, which means that before my brain knows that there's danger, my body is moving to safety. Now, I said to my doctors and scientists at the time, I said, you can tell me you don't know, you don't want to know, you don't care to know, you're not smart enough to know, but if you ever tell me that's the way the body is anymore, that's just the way it is, then you're fired. And that was just for me, I'm like, I'm not going to take these answers because every time I ask these seemingly stupid questions, level one, I'd get a very sophisticated answer. Like, why is it this way? Level two, I'd get another sophisticated answer. And then by the third level of questions, why is that? The answer was always the same for me. Well, that's just how the body is. And I said, look, either you're a man of science or you're saying it's all magic. Which one is it? And I'm okay if it's all magic, but I believe that there is a logic to this magic, and I want to find the logic.
Got it. So just to rephrase that, in other words, it's this is like what I've talked about with synapses and things. the whole nervous system and is not compatible with what we actually see as how we function. In other words, if you talk about nerve pathways traveling from your brain to your fingers, and that it takes a certain amount of time to do that, and then you watch somebody play Chopin on a piano, there is no way that they're having signals going from one place to another in that fast. It
Exactly.
cannot
And
be.
when I saw that, I'm like, okay, hold on a second here. This started to break down my belief in the narrative of how the body works. And I use stories to explain why I think the body works, but I am completely open to every story I'm telling is bullshit. It just
Yeah.
allows me to convey it in a way that people can understand it, because every time I learn something new, I learn completely that it almost invalidates the previous belief system. So one of the things that the research on fascia started to come out, which by the way had been done 20 years earlier over a 10-year period and not released until 2017, and they released this report called Your Fascia, the New Organ, the Interstitium, and it has this brain. And I looked at it and I'm like, oh, okay, this makes sense to me. Your fascia, they're saying, is photonic, so it's speed of light. It's
Just
bioacoustic.
tell people what fascia is, because like I hardly knew that myself.
Okay, well, I think the best way to explain it is to give you the creation of it. Okay, so when a sperm and an egg come together, a ball of plasma exists, and in there, there's these two nerve clusters that grow, and they're connected by what looks like a string. And no practitioner or scientist can tell you until about the 7th week which one becomes the brain and which one becomes the small intestine. So they're connected. So in other words, this ain't my second brain. I consider it to be my brain. And around that, the muscle skeletal system starts to develop. The organs develop outside of us, but we're grown in this ball of plasma, which I consider to be fascia. And it's not even until the 9th month that we get a neocortex, so that we can even separate ourselves from the emotions or feelings of our mother. And in that programming state there, that means that my muscles, my nerves, my bones, my tendons, my brains, my organs, everything is actually constructed with a base material of fascia. Fascia, you can cut everything out of the human body, every nerve, every bone, every organ, every tissue, you can cut hair out. But you cannot remove fascia, which means, from a systems point of view, means that we are fascia and everything else is inside of it. And that's just my logic around it. So I see, what I learned through studying it this way was there was this acoustic measurement, like I could feel something through it. Someone could walk into a room and I knew that they were angry. And I would always say, well, what's the mechanism? I mean, did they breathe hard? Did the bacteria come out of their mouth? Did they, like, how is it that I knew that? There's all these things that stimulations that happen in the body that the brain is not aware of when it's happening. So that's where I was saying that the body has this interstitium in the fascia, which has 100 trillion nerve endings, let's say, and your brain has 100 billion nerve endings. So basically what we're saying is that your body's a computer, your brain's a processor that's running programs. And when it can't solve the program, it just keeps running it. And that's the repetitive thoughts. And it makes the brain almost in a reductive way. It's saying the brain isn't in charge and it's not as powerful as we thought. And that's what I believe. I believe that the body's a computer and the brain is a processor. It takes a program from 10 years ago, runs it. When it's done with it, it puts it back down.
Okay. All right. So keep going.
So we observe that there is stimulation that comes into the body from somewhere that then triggers a response of the body. Like, for example, if you get touched and you didn't know where it came from, the first response is, am I okay? Am I safe? The body requires safety. And then it goes, do I know what this sensation is? And it goes to a bank of memories and says, where has that sensation then been there before? And it goes, okay, I remember this one. It's a touch. Do I like it or do I not like it? A judgment. And then from there, there's a series of hormones that seem to fire a series of actions in the body, let's say, that happen, stimulations and movements in the body that happen as a result. So basically saying that sensation comes before thought. That was my root logic. And again, I could be completely wrong, but this was the theory that I was working on to look at the body in a different way. Because then I could say, well, if I change the sensations, I can reduce the thought. And right now, a lot of the dis-ease, the body's not at ease. It comes in dysregulation of thought. And I'm overthinking, I'm worrying, I'm panicking, I have a narrative. And I recognize that people that had these narratives, like I'm not safe in my life, would then have I'm not safe in my food, in my relationships, and in my world. And so, and what I also noticed is that when we took people out of this biological stress of movement and we hydrated their body properly, mineralized it properly, I noticed that those feelings of safety changed and they became okay again. And again, the body, human body, from what I can understand, 75 years ago was 80% water. And when I get to meet you'll be able to touch me. I'm 80% water. And 30 years ago, we were 70% water. And I know the talk about water, it's more of a gel, but this fourth phase of water. And today, they're teaching in med school and diet school today that we are 60% water. So as we become dehydrated as a society, conversely, we've had commensurate amount of disease and discomfort increases. And it's at the exact same ratio. So we just went on this belief system that if we mineralize the body properly and we hydrated it and we moved it, that people would come out of stress. And when they came out of stress, then they could start to self-actualize, which in other words, let the trauma go, which was being held in their body, the stressors and the emotions about events. And it just cascaded into this movement. And when we found out we were doing these movements to do this for ourselves, in 3 months during the pandemic, my 30 years of pain had remediated itself, is gone. And I'm for the first time felt safe in my body because when I felt a level 9 pain, I could find my way out of it. I didn't feel helpless anymore. And so we decided to just publish this free of charge and see what the response would be. And
Gary, let me stop you for a minute, and I'm going to try. This is going to be tricky, I think, to try to recap what you just said as far as how to un what the thinking was behind this. And I don't think I'm going to get it because there's a lot there. But you start with there are external stimuli. In other words, the world impacts your body.
yes.
Right, there's either sound or some feeling you have that's provoked by somebody coming into the room or somebody touching you
Or EMF
or
or
EMF or
chemical.
right, doesn't have to be even something you're necessarily aware of. So that provokes the organ or the system. Or the thing, I try to be as just
Yeah, I get it.
it's
I'm
just
with you.
the thing that accepts that, in a sense, processes that is the fascia. And that's because we're made from fascia, and the fascia is the most highly innervated tissue of the body. So all those things, the EMFs, the emotions, the thoughts from other people, the touching from other people, the sticking you with the pin or whatever it is, that gets processed through the fascia by the fascia, which then sets off a whole series of events. I wouldn't call it hormonal because I think the hormones are
Sure.
just the chemical debris. That's the byproduct.
Completely
So
agree.
there's a whole series of events that also probably are influenced by, maybe mediated by the combination of the water, the structure of the water in the tissue, the gels in the tissue, and in conjunction with the fascia. Now, that response then impacts how you move, it impacts how your ovaries work, it impacts how you think, it impacts what you feel, and in particular, it has to do with your feeling, your experience of trauma, or even provoking memories where the issue of safety and what's happened to you and how you're going through life, and it connects you with memories, maybe through the processing that happens in the brain, to things that were maybe not happy or healthy experiences. And then the problem then is you start living in those traumas repetitively over and over again. Next thing you know, things don't work properly, and we call that disease.
Yeah. And, to the point of memory, it's you did a really good job because.
I'm pretty used to doing that. That's like my thing.
So from the, English is a very transactional language, so it's very phonetically representative of what it does. It's one of the worst languages in the world to communicate, because it takes out the emotion. But if we were to dismember a body, we would be cutting it up. Now, when we remember, we are taking components from the memory stores of the body and we're compiling it for a presentation. And again, using the way that we describe things, I find things in English around the body is very literal. And in the words usually is a very good, like, dis-ease is my body's not at ease. But if I'm feeling fear in my body's not at ease. If I hold that fearful thought in my body over a long period of time, I'm going to have a series of reactions that at some point can be diagnosed because I'm going to walk different, I'm going to urinate different, I'm not going to digest right. And so it started to go down this belief system that what if all disease was emotional? And I can certainly say that one of the greatest stressors on the body is dysregulation of these emotional cycles. You can see it. Blood sugar changes, thoughts change, the body goes into a stress state with emotions. So if we remove the stress, we remove the impact of of this on the body and the biological systems of the body, whether it's DNA or whatever we believe, we're removing the impact because it without that stress, the body seems to be able to know what to do. And I went on this journey with Jason and Cynthia at the time to break down some other myths. So we started off with a 44-day fast, 2 weeks without water. And I wanted to see that because I could see that when I don't eat food, I produce these stem cells that seem to cure the body. But when I'm eating food, I don't have them. So we started off with that, and it was one of the most wonderful experiences of my life. It broke my addiction to food, and we were climbing mountains and we were going out. It was we were moving all day long, and we were working these short blocks of time very efficiently, and we were only sleeping about 3 hours a night, and we got 8 hours a day of not cooking, cleaning, getting food, cleaning up from food. Not urinating, defecating, not using toilet paper, not using garbage in the house. It was this wild experiment. And it again, it drew up more questions because if food isn't the fuel, then what is it really? Well, it could be a medication. And then what is that medication? How could it be a medication when the real healing of the body is these stem cells? And so again, driving more questions than answers. And we're still in the experimental stage. But I have gone from 240 pounds to 178 pounds and have 80% water easily, feel like a 6-month-old, and can dislocate any of my joints, super mobile and flexible. And I'm light and feel good in my body for the first time in my life. I feel better than when I was a kid. And I just wanted to share this with people. So we put these movements out and we made them free of charge. And within a course of a couple of months of showing people how to fix things in their body, we had 1 million people following us on TikTok. And then we got overwhelmed with the volume of people, and we built systems over 5 years. And our goal was to keep it free, but we're also running out of money.
So in
Because
other words,
free.
when you in conjunction with the fast, then you were also doing very specific movements which were designed to, I don't know if the word stimulate, but help the fascia be at ease. So,
Yes.
yeah,
They reduce what we can measure from like hormone
right. This
testing or from impedance or stress on the body, thermal scans, is that in the first 7 to 10 minutes of these movements, like a 15-minute stress reset,
Right.
that 75% of the stress in the body to 90% drops in those first 7 to 10 minutes,
Right.
which means that if I can control my stress response, that means that, and I do that multiple times in a day, that means my baseline stress starts to drop and I have more capacity for stressors or adaption to the environment.
Right. And basically then it allows the healing program to work as it should, rather than just putting out fires, so to speak, all the time.
Sure. And so we put these movements out and we just threw them out, and millions of people started doing them. But
So
we
these
were
are
trying to,
movements you can do yourself.
yeah, they're all online, they're free. You can go to our website. There's groups of them called reset programs, like a upper reset, a lower reset, a 15-minute reset.
Yeah.
But we have these programs that we developed, like a 28-day reset, which was the one we did. And then training programs called Lifestyle Artist Level 1 and Level 2, which is deeper dive in how it works and in our philosophy, training in what we believe the body is. And again, completely open to somebody coming and saying it's completely wrong and we'll change it right away.
Yeah.
But
By the
giving.
way, for people listening, the other day I talked with Gary and he showed me a bunch of pictures of before and after people who, did, I guess, some of these programs or movements or whatever techniques. And you could clearly see that, people were like this before. I'm exaggerating, and then they were like this. That's probably not really good. But
No, they were. I mean, and it's
they
as
were
if people.
taller and straighter, and there you could even see in their facial gestures were more relaxed. So obviously there was an ability to put the body at ease in a fairly short time, which is, reproducible and visible. That was very clear from seeing that.
And we tried to train practitioners originally, but they didn't want to hear it. They wanted to challenge the belief system. And so what we just did is when we released it to the public, what happened invariably is every practitioner has 10 or 15 or 20 people that they can't really help. They don't know why. They keep coming back to them. They're in these repetitive cycles. And these are the ones that found us. And they started changing themselves in front of their practitioners. And then all of a sudden, practitioners started joining. And today, at the best guess, we have about 1 million practitioners that are involving, prescribing, using, referring these on a daily basis right now.
These being these series of movements, these
Yeah, we call
resets.
them fascial maneuvers. Now, fascial is not a word. We invented it. Fascia is a word. Fascial allows us to trademark it. So it's fascial maneuvers. And maneuvers, because it's more than a movement, there's maneuvers are tactical and specific, where a movement is in specific. So these are tactical and specific around a root set of logic, which is counter rotation, pinning the fascia, breathing through mouth and nose. They have different parameters that cause the body to compress. And then as we compress and we breathe, the fascia twists. And that twisting action seems to create friction, a piezoelectric friction, which releases it. And people get really super high when they do them, which is kind of cool because you're high on your own supply. So it has this impact on things like addiction and all these other things that we weren't really thinking of at the first.
Yeah. Okay. I think that's it. So maybe just describe what, so where you're at and how would people connect with you, learn more about it? What's the next step for people?
I think the next step, the best way to do this is don't take my word for any of this. Go and try it out. Results are usually immediate, like the first one or two times that you do it. Start with something really simple. Go to our website, humangarage.net. Grab a 15-minute stress reset. If you can save 15% with Geico in 15 minutes, well, you can drop 75 to 90% of your stress in 15 minutes. So give that a shot. And if it resonates with you, there's a series of resets. You can start with a lower reset or an upper reset. So if you had lower body issues, you would do a full body with a lower one or a full body with an upper reset. And then if that further resonates with you after like 7, 10 days, we have a 28-day reset, which fully immerses you and trains you. It's all free of charge. And that 28-day reset brings you into an awareness of how we see the world, how to remineralize and rehydrate your body, how to do it free of charge, because most of the world doesn't have access. We do have supplements that people can buy that support our mission and movement, but we're clear to say don't take supplements forever. We don't believe in that. Get it from food, but here's how you get it from your food. And go through that if you feel that you have an issue. There are right now practitioners and coaches and people springing up all over the world. We're currently building systems. We have approximately 30 million people around the world. They're doing this daily. We're gaining about 1.5 million a month, and there's about 1 million practitioners. So we're building infrastructure to help people make it easier to find people, but that's in the works. Like we have an app that you can get on, you can
Yeah.
find other people, and there's likely a class or a group somewhere in your area that's doing this, and you can go meet them in person.
Got it. All right. So you can get started as you described on your own. You can see, where it's at for you, how it feels to you. Presumably, a lot of people, maybe most, will have something that seems like, well, my life is somehow better. I always say, our goal in medicine, like at our clinic, is just to help people's lives be better. We're not curing anything because that implies diagnosis. It's just, person comes in this situation and we make their life better. It sounds like that's what you're doing. Do this, their life gets better, and then they can keep going as they see fit and get more into it. Is that?
That's exactly our belief system. And that's why I wanted to connect with you because I find that your work is transformational. We're going through this wild change right now where 50% of the healthcare workers worldwide have left their station. We currently have 25 times the amount of people going into a system that's already broken. We have the largest health crisis in the history of recorded mankind is currently happening. And we haven't yet felt the effects of it. And it's time for people to regain the sovereignty of their own health. And that regains the sovereignty of their own health when they can feel good at their own hand at any time in their body. Then they can make better decisions about the more complex issues in their health.
I just had an interview with somebody and they pointed out that, a lot of people are seem to be always asking me, say, my son, my daughter, my wife, my cousin, I cannot convince them that, there's like no viruses or whatever. And frankly, you can't convince anybody of anything.
Right.
And this doctor who I was talking to said that what she had learned is that, which I think is exactly part of what you're saying, people resonate, if you want to use that word, with where they're at and essentially what their water crystal, their mesophase, as it's been described, hears. So if you say something that's not able to resonate with what their crystal can accept, it's like you didn't say anything.
Right.
There's nothing to accept it. So rather than using words and language and even sophisticated logic, like sort of that's like what I do. But if you change people's body, right, and change their hydration, i.e. their liquid crystal, they start hearing things differently. They start knowing things differently. They start moving things. They release their fears and their traumas, and it comes organically rather than browbeating somebody into believing something. Now, I do think you can use some sort of thinking to help, but I totally get it. You have to change your body, and that means your water, essentially, water fascia. You change your crystalline nature, and just like any crystal, it starts resonating differently. And there you go.
Yeah, we have two things that I could say around that. The first one is we changed our wording, over time to be more inclusive. And what we found is empowering people to heal themselves was not the right, because empower means that their power was taken away. We're inspiring people to live a better life. And the other thing that I have found, coincidentally, like you can't convince people, but when the pain of staying the same is greater than the pain of changing, society in general changes. And right now, we're going into what I believe over the next 24 months will be the most painful aspects of human health in recorded history. And this self-care movement, this movement to disintermediate the belief systems which you're driving, and to find ways to take care of oneself, is the primary currency of the future. And people are worried about finance and money and stuff like that. It doesn't make a difference if you're sick and dying. So there is only one currency left in this world, and that's feeling good in your own body. And if I feel good in my body, birds of feather flock together. I attract those that are.
Got it. All right. And so humangarage.net, that's where people can go.
Absolutely.
I think we gave people a really good sense of this. It's great to talk to you, Gary. And
I'm looking forward to getting together and putting my hands on
got
you.
Okay, we'll make it happen. All right.
Thanks a
Thank
lot,
you.
Tom.
And I think we're good.
Okay.
Bye bye.